Merry Christmas. This is Sunday, December 20th, and we are just 5 days from Christmas and that time when all the little children and many of the adults are excited about opening their present or presents. I know the children that we work with are so excited they can hardly stand it. And we can hardly stand it too. Oh, but I tell you, Christmas is quite the wonderful experience when you know what it stands for and what it really is supposed to be. It's displayed as the birth of Christ, and we all know so well the story of the manger and the baby in the manger and the wise men and Mary and Joseph and no room at the inn. And perhaps we understand those symbols. We've heard them before. But there's another story of Christmas, and I'm going to tell it to you in a minute. First, I'm going to go downstairs and get a cup of coffee. I will be right back. Okay, so where were we? Okay, Christmas. I've spent the last few evenings with the children. You know, we work with special needs children. And so we decorated the house. We have a sort of an archway between the kitchen and the dining room, and also between the living room and the family room. And we put lights around those. And then we put the tree up and put lights all over the tree. And then we went outside, and there's an arch over the walkway up to the house, and we decorated that with lights and put some around the tree and set it all to a timer to go off when it gets dark. And to light up, I mean, when it gets dark, and go off, and turn off about 1 in the morning. And the children are all delighted. You know, I've learned something. Just because I'm practicing the presence and practicing seeing through the illusion of this world does not mean that I have to be a stuffed shirt. I can still be a playful fellow at times. I can still play with the children and delight in their happiness. I can still delight in giving my wife exactly what I know she would love for Christmas. I can still do all these, quote, normal things and at the same time be practicing the presence. And it takes some doing. Joel talks about living a double life. We say things out here, but in here we practice the principles, and that's pretty much been my life for a long, long time. Now, I picked up this book, Leave Your Nets, and as often happens to me, I can pick up a book and turn to any old chapter, and it kind of has to do with where I have been living. And it's true in this chapter 2. Chapter 11, Awake Thou That Sleepest. You know, I want to say something here. When I was a child, I would say about 1959, I remember laying in my bed late at night, and my mother was not yet asleep. My sister and brother were asleep, but my mother was not asleep yet. And I was determined that I was going to stay awake. This was Christmas Eve, 1959, and I was going to stay awake long enough so that after she went to bed, I could catch Santa in the act. And I looked, my bedroom had a door that was open, and I could look directly into the, down the hall into the living room, and I could see the Christmas tree, and there were no presents under there yet. Oh, just one or two maybe, but Santa hadn't come. And so I determined to stay awake. And I looked, and I looked, and I looked, and finally she went to bed. And I continued to look, and my eyes grew heavy, of course, and I just sort of closed them for a minute, and then I realized what I was doing, and my eyes popped open, and all the presents were there. I didn't catch them. I thought I only closed my eyes for a minute. But the presents were there, so of course I must have slept for a few minutes. And I did not catch Santa. And you know, I've thought of that over the years, because when we practice these principles and we keep looking to see if we can see a change, we never see a change. We have to stop looking. We have to practice the principle, whatever principle it is we're working with. Let's say it's the principle of recognition that this appearance is not real. It's an appearance, yes, there's something there, a series of universal beliefs, but it's not real, and behind it is a spiritual universe. I am standing in a spiritual universe. Now, if I open my eye and take a peek, I probably won't see any change. But if I can rest and not peek, just rest in the realization that this is a spiritual universe, then something wonderful happens. Harmony appears. And when the meditation is over, or when a day or two has passed, I look again and there's all the presence. Or, in this case, there's the presence appearing as harmony. So anyway, as I looked at this chapter 11, I could see myself as being right here. And let's see. I believe we all know by now that changing the outer world, or what appears as the outer world, is not the answer, not the solution. Indeed, Joel says in the Wisdoms that all problems must be met in consciousness. And so what is the answer? We know the answer now to be what he says in the New Horizon, to catch a glimpse of the spiritual universe. It is your awareness of the spiritual universe that is the Christ, and that dissolves the seemingly real appearance. Now, he says here in Awake Thou That Sleepest, the thinking of the average human being does not penetrate the realm of the spirit. His entire life, his reasoning faculties, and his awareness remain in a three-dimensional world, a world that can be thought about and known only from the physical senses. In that realm, all forms of human power, might, strength, and wisdom are either aiding or harming us. They are either being used constructively or destructively. And the entire human world is made up of pictures of good and bad. The few who penetrate the veil and see into the spiritual real discover there is another power and presence that is neither a power nor a presence in the human sense of things. And so, the answer, the solution to these things which trouble us, this lack, limitation, disease, death, in harmony, in human relationships, and even terrorism, to speak a modern term, the solution is not to go out there and do something. And that's where we get fooled. We see it happening out there, whether it's lack, limitation, death, or dying, or destruction, or inharmony, or a tornado, or a hurricane, or an earthquake. And we want to run out and do something. And that's normal, that's natural. You might say, what's wrong with that? I care about people. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. It's good that you care about people. The only problem with that is it's not an answer. God never made people. That's right. God never made human beings. And when we look into and have a glimpse of the spiritual universe, we don't see human beings. We see the real universe of God's creation, the temple not made with hands. And what is in that universe? Well, Joel says there are children of God. And there are. But here's the shocker. How many children did God make? And the answer is one. There is one child of God. And when you look into the spiritual universe, you see that one child. And that one child is infinitely manifest. And so God itself expressed, its expression is that one child, appearing in infinite forms and variety, but spiritual forms and variety. And so, yes, there are children of God, but they are spiritual forms of the one expression of the one God. And they are called Christ. So when you look into the spiritual universe, what will you see? You will see Christ. And that's the answer. Your awareness of the spiritual universe, of the Christ, is what dissolves these problems appearing. It dissolves the appearance. And so in this chapter, Awake Thou That Sleepest, this is what he's discussing. He says, this three-dimensional world, which is called the human or material world, really is only a false concept of the real, and is never destroyed in and of itself. It is seen through. And that's so hard to grasp. It is so hard to grasp that. Because, as I just said, when you see something wrong, you want to do something about it. Here's an example. And one that I've had a difficult time with lately. And that is when my wife discovered that she had cancer, and we went to the doctor, and the expert doctor took x-rays and did an MRI and said, this is that, and that is this, and I'm going to have to start cutting pieces off. And we sat there, and I saw her expression. I can tell you, it was very, very difficult to feel anything of a spiritual nature. Yet, had I had the ability to not look at her expression, to look through her, to see through the x-rays, to see through that situation, and immediately touch the spirit, I am certain there would have been a different outcome. And so perhaps I haven't made any talks in a couple of weeks because I've been feeling that I should have done better. But anyway, he describes that right here. He says, I'll just read it to you. As long as there has been recorded history, there have been secret religious orders or brotherhoods formed for many different purposes under many different names, and all requiring some form of initiation. You know, a lot of us say, oh, I'd like to be initiated. He says in the parenthesis in eternity, oh, no, you wouldn't. You would not like to face what you have to face. And he says here, the initiates must undergo certain trials, tests, and examinations before they are admitted to brotherhood. And while the actual initiation may differ in its exterior form, the tests and trials and examinations are all alike in this respect. The initiates must go through difficult and terrifying experiences. For example, in their meditations and in their periods of quiet, they behold pictures of their loved ones dying, being killed or robbed. They may even see visions of betrayal, falseness, or deceit. And the temptation then is to leave the order and quickly return home to protect their loved ones, or to do whatever is necessary to restore harmony in their experience. At each one of these steps, some initiates do succumb to these temptations and go home. And that ends their spiritual progress. Others find themselves in harrowing experiences of a different nature, and they too drop by the wayside. Eventually, those who survive the simpler tests and temptations come to the ultimate one. The final test is being faced with death in some form, such as being brought to the brink of a cliff and being told, and of course one must be obedient, to jump off the cliff onto the rocks or the waters beneath. And the cliff is so high and the rocks below so jagged, there's no hope of survival. To jump means death. Which will it be, death or disobedience? If it is disobedience, there is no hope of being admitted to the brotherhood. If it is death, that also ends all hope. So he says, there is a test. A test which each one within himself must decide to take or not. Needless to say, anyone who is obedient and jumps off the cliff immediately becomes a member of the brotherhood. Because long before he can reach the rocks, he has awakened and found that the whole experience was an illusion. He had been hypnotized into seeing and accepting these pictures. But from the very first to the last, none of them was ever real. So, he says, today we are the initiates, and right now we are taking the degrees of brotherhood. Right now we are being tested and tried with experiences of lack and limitation, sin and disease. We may not realize we are undergoing an initiation, but we are. Some of us are even being tested by the experience of death. But what a revelation it is to see the look on the faces of some of the people who thought they died. All right, so I feel that I've been going through some of that myself over the last month or two. And I'm still here and I'm still practicing the principles. And I am not perfect. I have never said I was perfect. But I am practicing these principles and awakening out of this illusion called cancer. He says here, the human mind cannot pierce the veil of material sense. No, the human mind is that illusion. That's the one showing us these pictures. Something else is required. And he's going to tell us what that is. Everyone who has been responsible for spiritual healing knows that he has never healed a disease or set a bone. All he has done is pierce the illusion of hypnotic suggestion and see through to the world and the man of God's creating. see that God is the only life, the only wisdom, law, substance, cause, and effect. And the faculty that enables one to pierce the veil and to see through the illusion is the Christ. Spiritual consciousness. And spiritual consciousness means consciousness of the Spirit. It's that simple, isn't it? He keeps things really simple. Consciousness of the Spirit. Well, we've said this for years now. Christ is omnipresent. But what good does that do you? No good. You can read about it, think about it, contemplate it. It does you absolutely no good unless and until you have, and I have, the conscious awareness of Christ. When awareness of Christ comes, that is what dissolves the appearance and nothing else. Nothing else will dissolve it. So it takes an actual glimpse into the universe of Christ here and now. Spiritual consciousness is, he says, consciousness of the Spirit, or conscious awareness of the Spirit. And that is what pierces the veil and dissolves or melts the illusion. So he utters his voice, the earth melteth. We've heard that over the years. Means when you receive the conscious awareness of Spirit, the world of illusion melts or dissolves. And that's the only way it can happen. And all of us are walking toward that place where, as he says in other writings, that conscious awareness becomes a permanent dispensation. That conscious awareness becomes your new mind, the mind that was in Christ Jesus. And really, that is, we talk about Christmas being the celebration of the birth of Christ. When that spiritual consciousness, that spiritual awareness, the awareness of the Spirit, becomes your everyday consciousness, then the birth of Christ has happened to you. You have experienced the real Christmas. He says, there is a universe of harmony here and now, and we may enter it at will, not by choice, but because there is no other universe. All that is necessary to behold it in a tiny measure is Christ consciousness, or the conscious awareness of Christ. So we've talked about, over and over, two women on a bus bench. And one is seeing how horrible this world is, and the horrible things such as terrorism and earthquakes and people with guns shooting up children and downturns in the economy, recessions, depressions, feeling pretty miserable. And the woman sitting next to her on that bus bench, only 2 feet away, is looking into the spiritual universe here and now, seeing God expressed as Christ, the one Son, in infinite variety and forms, spiritual forms, invisible forms. And there's a peace that comes over that one. My peace. What is there to fight? What is there to do? But simply to rest in my peace. And there remaineth a rest to that child of God. 3 feet apart, living in different universes. So says Joel, the question comes, how do we attain the ability to see through the illusion and to know it's safe for us to jump, since the only place we can jump is into the everlasting arms? And the answer is, you already have the first seed of that illumination. It is because you had that seed in the beginning that you set out on this path. Yes, for those of you that are practicing these principles and something in you says, this is the way. Yes, I know I falter at times, even sometimes I fail. But I pick myself up, I brush myself off, I say, okay, what did I miss? I go back to the blackboard, as it were. I find the principle and I begin again. That something driving us to do that is the seed that will sprout into this Christ consciousness. And how do we attain the ability to see through it? We practice the principles. He says, relax and understand you're not on this path of your choice or by your will, but that a seed was planted in you and it is sprouting. And the more you can realize that and just step aside and let it take its normal course, the more quickly will you awaken. And the awakening is an act of grace, an act of God, for which you have no responsibility. The government is on his shoulders. Yes, that is the same as my realization that I do not have to struggle. I don't have to work on it. I just have to relax in the awareness of Christ. It's not the mental effort to remember the principle. You see, I was remembering the principles mentally as I sat in that office, but it did me no good. Mentally remembering the principles does you no good. You have to have the conscious awareness of spirit and the spiritual universe, right where the appearance is appearing. It's the conscious awareness that melteth, not the mental understanding. It's a different faculty. It's a whole different faculty that allows you to rest. Oh yes, you can use the mind in remembering the principles, but only if it leads you to a place of resting in the actual awareness of the presence. If it no longer works for you, then you must stop using the mind. That's what Joel means by we reach a place where the only thing we can do is say, there's no answer to that. And then stand stock still. The practice of that is how this new faculty comes into play. The practice of that will allow you to catch a glimpse of the new Jerusalem, the new horizon, the new earth, the new kingdom, the new heaven, and the new self. Those of you, you know, we started Mystical Principles in 2005, and we're just about to roll into 2016, so it's been a little over 10 years. And those of you that have been here the whole time, you know that we've gradually come up through the principles where we were knowing a lot of truth with our minds to where we recognize that's not working. This picture is not melting. Something more is required. And you know, we returned and we found, thanks to a wonderful person called Sharon that sent me the Kahlua Study Series transcripts, you know that we returned to that and we found Joel saying, it's taken 10 years, but we're finally at the place where we can stop using the mind, and we can simply say, There's no answer to that, and stand still and wait. Wait for that inner faculty to move, to reveal itself. Relax. Understand you're not on the path by your choice or by your will. The more you can realize that and just step aside and let it take its normal course, the more quickly will you awaken. You see that? And he says, Joel says, you might be very angry with him for a while, or angry at the infinite way, and I've felt some of that, because it's taken away everything, all the false crutches that you've been leaning on. Namely, mentally knowing the truth. And in its place, it's given you what? Nothing. You're supposed to rest back on nothingness. Nothing the human mind can get a hold of. And it's true. No answer to that picture in the doctor's office. No answer. Stop. And I must stand still until I pierce the veil and catch a glimpse and feel a movement of the living God, the living Christ, the living heaven here and now. That is what melteth these mental images. So says Joel, where then is your personal responsibility? It is to be normal, be natural, live every day in accordance with the pattern that's placed before you in the morning. Keep, insofar as possible, in thought that you must never judge man or circumstance from its appearance. Stop looking at sick and sinful man and wondering, how do I make him well? Stop looking at the pictures that are painted in the newspapers, on the radio and television, and stop wondering how you can improve them. You are not going to improve them. Illumination is going to dissolve them. You see the difference? Here one man is racing out to improve them. Here the other man is standing aside and beholding. He's a beholder, watching this illumination, this light, dissolve them. Watching another faculty dissolve them. And the greatest part of that illumination is the realization that only God can do it. So, if I were to give you the greatest gift that I have ever had, if I was going to say, Merry Christmas, my friends, and hand you a gift, what is the most important to me, more important than anything else, it would not be my wife. It would not be my money. It would not be my anything. More important than all of that is this ability to experience Christmas. It's the ability to stand still and see the birth of a new faculty. Spiritual faculty, spiritual awareness, awareness of spirit. This is what I would give you, the Christmas experience. Now, Joel says, herein lies the secret of dehypnotization. Look out from God's size. Okay, let's read the whole thing. Herein lies the secret of dehypnotization. That is, the secret of waking out of the illusions of sense, temptation, mortality, ignorance, and superstition. The secret? Look out from God's side. First of all, be sure that you have caught a glimpse of God. Then, look out from God's side, and you will find a God-governed world. A God-maintained and sustained world. And whatever the illusion appears to be, you will find God to be the dissolver of it. As you realize this, personal responsibility drops away, and you know you do not have to struggle for enlightenment. It is coming to you as fast as you can receive it. It's a very strange thing. It's so different from everything we learned growing up. I was taught in elementary school, middle school, and high school, in college, and in postgraduate. I was taught if there's a problem, you grab that thing and you wrestle with it until you solve it. You think your way through. Thinking is better than muscles. You can come up with a solution, and two heads are better than one. Apparently not. Anyway, two heads are better than one, so you need to think your way through this. Use your intellect, the brightest and the fastest. And that's what I was taught, and everybody else. What would the world be like if everyone was taught you are here to be an instrument for this spiritual awareness? You do not have to struggle. You have things to do. Yes, there's a mission. You have work. But you do not have to struggle. You have to learn to rest. Rest first thing in the morning until you feel this movement, this inner movement, and you know that Christ has come. Rest until you catch a glimpse, until you see through this world into my kingdom. Rest, rest, and behold, live as a beholder of this spiritual awareness, this awareness of spirit, flowing out and being what it wants to be through you. And then share with others. Share what you have. Give it away. For the more you give, the more you open a way for it to give to you. What kind of a world would that be? Well, it would be the kind of world that we will live in when we begin to practice these principles. Not by might, not by physically hearing them or reading them, not by power, not by mentally rehearsing them in our minds. No, but by standing still and feeling that faculty, that spiritual faculty. Standing still and catching a glimpse. Then it melteth. Says Joel, there is no solution to the human scene through human means. There is no solution to the human scene except waking up out of it. That's hard to come to grips with sometimes. There is no solution to the human scene except waking up out of it. How do you tell that to someone that just lost their son in a war? How do you tell that to someone that the doctor has just said, this is serious, stage two, or whatever? How do you tell that to someone that has just been just seen their entire savings go up in smoke from a dishonest hedge fund manager? Well, Jesus didn't find it too difficult? Because the man came to him and Jesus said, follow me. And the man said, I can't. My dad, he just died. And I have to make the funeral arrangements and I have to bury him, but I'll come afterwards. What did he say? Was he sympathetic? Was he understanding? Was he compassionate? In a human sense, what we would expect? What would you say? You would say, oh, okay, sure. Yes, you go ahead and take 3 days for bereavement, and I'll see you then. No. Jesus said, hey, you let the dead bury the dead. You come and follow me. What does that mean? That means there's no solution to the human scene except wake up. Don't be another dead person burying dead people. Wake up. And that's what this initiation is all about. You know, Christmas just doesn't come on some lovely morning. Christmas comes after the initiation. We don't want the initiation. Don't show me those pictures. But we have to pass through them, even if momentarily we stumble. We have to pass through them and see, yes, even there, it is possible to catch a glimpse, to feel the movement, to have an awareness of spirit. And then they passed by. They looked horrible, but they had no permanent effect. Or they melteth right on the spot. Now, as you begin to see that man whose breath is in his nostrils is not a reality, but an illusion, and that actually there stands the Christ, you will begin to see a change. Oh, I remember when I was 18 years old, so many years ago, ditching class in the 12th grade because I didn't care to learn what they were teaching me. I wanted to know about this book I had called The Art of Meditation, and so I ditched class and I went to the park and I opened the book and read it. And I thought how simple that is, just to know that only Christ is here. And now we're almost half a century later, and I am still being initiated. I'm still learning that it's not what you see, hear, taste, touch, or smell. It's not what you think. It is a spiritual universe. But you must see that universe. You must have a glimpse, an awareness of that universe for it to be real to you. And so we go upward and onward. When you see this universe from the standpoint of Christ as individual being, when you look through the appearance to the underlying reality, letting every opinion, every thought and conviction stem from God, then the world will begin to come to you in this new dimension. And this, my friends, is the real Christmas. I mean, listen to this. You could be sitting on a bus bench looking at the universe in desperation and depression, in quiet desperation, because it's so horrible. And yet, when you stop all that critical thinking, you stop all those desperate thoughts. And you look. Just look. The mind is still for a moment. And accidentally you catch a glimpse of Christ as the only being. You have a spiritual experience. You're sitting there and you see for a moment the universe opens up and you touch Christ. You see it face to face. And you know it's always been so. It will always be so. The first, the last, the beginning, the end, the middle. I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. And suddenly you know there's nothing to do but rest. It is all already perfect. And then the world that you thought you knew comes to you in a new dimension. This is Christmas. This is the birth of Christ in your consciousness. Joel says, since you and I are of the household of God, and we have caught a glimpse, at least, of true being, we are the ones that must do this in our own way. We must know this again and again, day by day. He says it becomes natural for every one of us to obey the impulse to behold spiritually rather than materially. And that's what the initiation is. No matter what the circumstance, no matter what the pictures confronting you and me, I have to stand still and behold spiritually rather than what I'm seeing materially. And sometimes, and I had to do that while I was down there at the offices, I have to excuse myself and under the pretense that I need to use the restroom, and I go there and get quiet until I feel that movement. Because sometimes I can't do that while I'm being flooded with information about the entire history of the disease and where it will probably go and what it will probably do and all that. So Joel says here, he asks the question, can I do enough? Will I do enough? Will I measure up? No, you will not measure up, but neither will you fail. You are but the instrument through which the Christ is finding entrance into human consciousness. That is what you are. That is what we are. We are the instruments now being used by the divine consciousness, and the responsibility is not on our shoulders. We did not bring ourselves to this state of consciousness in the first place. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you. This is very, very tricky. Because on the one hand, we can fool ourselves, and I've been guilty of it, into thinking, well, I don't have to do anything. It's up to God. Isn't this fantastic? And I told you about my Indian friend who feels it's all an illusion, so why bother? Let's just eat, drink, and be merry. It's just an illusion. Why take it so serious? But that's not the entire truth, is it? No. Yes, it is an illusion, but it does me no good just to know that with my mind and go on about my business, because it'll hurt me just as much as if I didn't know that with the mind. No, something else is required. Yes. Yes, God brought me to this. God's grace brought me to this point. But unless I consciously catch a glimpse, unless I consciously have an awareness of spirit, the earth of illusion will not melt. Knowing it is an illusion with the mind won't help, unless it leads me to a place where I say, okay, it's an illusion. Now, Father, reveal yourself, and I stand still and catch a glimpse. then for me, yes, it's an illusion, and I know it on a much deeper level because I've seen the spirit dissolve the image. I have seen the light dissolve the darkness. So yes, even though it's not my responsibility, I still have to practice the principles until I feel that inner movement, and then I can release myself into it. As Joel said, rest back on a sea of spirit. He says, there is something in your consciousness and mind that has prepared us to be the light of the world. Probably only a little bit of a light right now, but nevertheless the light of the world. And it will continue to express itself in us and through us. It will maintain us. It will sustain us. And wherever necessary, it will dissolve the illusions of sense so that we can perceive the mesmeric nature of the entire world, looked at from the standpoint of appearances. Once we have beheld the very presence of the Christ or experienced its activity, its action, its movement, how can that leave us untouched? Or how can it leave us where it found us? Okay, so if you have an inner experience of Christ, it will dissolve images. And so Joel says, we have caught a glimpse of the greatest truth ever revealed, and that is that the appearance world is not a world to be destroyed, but to be seen through. Not feared, hated, not battled, but seen through in its nothingness, in the illusory nature of its fabric. And so this is your Christmas present. No greater blessing will ever come to you than the realization of the fact that we must not be fooled by these appearances. Once the light has touched us, we won't be. No, because we will know. It may take a while before you learn to do this, and before I learn to do this at will in under any circumstance. But remember, take heart in that Joel says eventually the Christmas gift that comes to us all when we're not looking is this consciousness takes over and begins living itself. Or, if you prefer, rather than mentally knowing the truth all the time, you reach a stage where you rest and behold this spiritual faculty, this awareness of spirit, begins flowing of itself. And it's marvelous. It's wonderful. In the degree that this light penetrates consciousness, in that degree do the illusory pictures of sin, disease, death, lack, limitation, war, volcanoes, earthquakes, and all other evils of human existence disappear from off the face of the earth because they never had existence as reality. Their only existence was the same as the initiate's experience in the Brotherhood. It was hypnotism. Now, do these disappear from off the earth for everybody? No. They disappear from off the earth for you. You being the conscious awareness of spirit, or spiritual consciousness. Your neighbor may still continue to see them, but you look through them. You behold a different universe. You behold a new dimension. You behold a Christmas day of Christ. You behold living waters in the midst of you, springing up into life everlasting. If you understood the gift of God and who it is that says to you, give me to drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living waters springing up into life everlasting. That's the Christmas gift, Christ consciousness, the birth of Christ consciousness. So, says Joel, when those periods of temptation to believe in some evil overpowering appearance come, and come they do, and come they will, just be alert. Remember quickly, you are not dealing with the appearance as it seems to be. You are dealing with an appearance that has no substance and no law. It cannot do any harm. In the measure of your quick response, will your freedom come from the fear, the doubt, and the delay in the realization of good. And so, the chapter, Awake Thou That Sleepest, I know it doesn't look at first glance as if it has anything to do with Christmas, and yet, when we have the inner recognition that this awareness of spirit is the true Christmas gift, the true birth of Christ, the true birth of a faculty that is not human, not mental, not physical, but spiritual, then we can see that yes, Christmas is the awakening, and the two are really one. And when I told you about that story of looking through my door into the living room at the Christmas tree and hoping to catch Santa putting the presents around the tree, and I failed miserably. But when I woke up, the presents were there. This is the same exact principle. If you are knowing the truth that this image is an illusion and there's nothing I can do humanly about it, and so there's no answer to that. And if you will stand still, don't peek, just stand still and rest. Joel says you can take a statement such as, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. You can take one of those I statements. I am the way. Rest in me. I am the resurrection. I am Christmas. And rest. And just like the little boy back there in 1959 that awakened to discover the presence, not knowing how they got there, you, in this moment of rest within, in your meditation, will feel a movement, and you will awaken to a presence. You will awaken to the finest present ever given. You will awaken to the gift of Christmas. You will awaken to the birth of Christ in your consciousness, or your conscious awareness of Christ. And you won't know how it came. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. Open. And you open by standing still. You make the invitation, Father, reveal thyself, and you stand still. And you won't know how it came. Simply that you're in it, and it is wonderful. And you have the conscious awareness of spirit. And then you discover the image is dissolving or dissolved right before your eyes in a way you know not of. How did those presents get there? I never did discover. How did that presence get there where that image appeared? I don't know that either. Joel claims that after thousands and thousands of healings, he had no idea how to heal. I submit the same is true today. After thousands and thousands of meditations, I have no idea how the spirit flows. But I know that it does. And to be in it, and to rest in it, and to behold it is the most wonderful Christmas of all. And so I thank you for taking this time, for listening to these talks throughout the year, for it is only by giving that I receive. It is only by forgiving that I am forgiven. It is only by dying to self, standing still, that I awaken to the Christmas experience. Christ, on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.